Right along to Justine Brindley, a serial insurance company lawyer. Tyndall, Promina, and now Suncorp. Well, Suncorp by acquisition. Justine is legal manager and senior lawyer of the General Insurance Advisory Legal Team at Suncorp. So all these headaches are hers. Please welcome Justine.
Thanks, Michael. General insurers really don't sell anything tangible. We sell a promise, and we sell a promise if something happens. Therefore, we use stacks of information to do that. I'm constantly being drawn into meetings to meet data analysts, data partners, strategic learning consultants, anyone that's got a buzzword like that, whose sole function is to find data, sell data, and analyse data. Big data is on the agenda for all of us as large corporates, but however you conceptualise data, here are some terms that are bandied around. Just have a bit of a look. But big data itself, the actual concept of big data, is actually about three things, and these three things traditionally are volume, quantity, that is how much data, the variety or the source of that data, and the speed at which it can be obtained and analysed. But personally for me, it's not really clear to me in terms of financial services organisations such as general insurers, if we all go and buy big data and we all sort of saturate the market and sort of buy a whole stack of it, the only thing that I think is really differentiating ourselves between other insurers is the skill set of the people in our organisation who are there to analyse, purge and purge that data, as well as the investment in the software and tools that we might use to have a look at that data. I guess the final piece in the big data puzzle is actually the use or the benefit of it for us, such as general insurers. And crudely, I'm going to say that it's probably about profit. We can increase sales, we can decrease expenses, we can make our environment more efficient and more effective, but at the end of the day, I mean, we can risk manage, create better customer service, perhaps some altruistic customer benefits, but at the end of the day, it's about creating profit. Big data is about all sorts of data, and I don't have time to talk about all of that because my focus is really going to be on the most interesting part of data, personal information, and that stuff that's regulated by the Privacy Act. So the definition of personal information is on the screen, and I'm not going to talk about it because it's on the screen. It's the first bullet point, and it's the new enhanced definition from March 2014. Yeah, it's not really very helpful. And it's not helpful because primarily working out whether something's personal information is about the context, not just about the definition. So I'm not going to explain the definition, but I'm going to propose you some context around things that might be in your organisations. Let's take an example, a date of birth and a quote number. On their own, sitting on a corner street, they're not personal information. If someone picks them up, no one's going to be able to do anything with that. But for an insurer who has the quoting system and has the tools internally, their personal information, who can link it to the customer file. Now, let's assume that that quoting system in a lot of our organisations is a legacy system and it's going to be decommissioned and we can't get access to it, and IT says, no, it's going to cost too much money to go in and put all that information together. Perhaps then it's not personal information, those two bits of information. Now, let's assume again that we split that date of birth and that quote number and we give it a unique identifier. We call it XY123. And we split that data in our organisation. We say, we've de-identified it. We've aggregated it. No one knows what that means. But if you have, within your organisation, if you have the ability to match and re-identify XY123 to mean quote number and date of birth, it's still personal information. The Privacy Act is principles-based, and it's based on things called the Australian Privacy Principles. And it's difficult to advise on these because basically it's principles-based. It is technology neutral, the Privacy Act. It doesn't talk about paper, it doesn't talk about all those sorts of things, but the fact that it's technology neutral doesn't actually mean that it's easy to apply to technology. And some people say to me, is it that the Privacy Act is lagging behind these new technologies and lagging behind big data? Or is it really that organisations might not like the consequences or the implications of often what I get asked, is that an unintended consequence of the law? After advising on this for a number of years, the last 14 years, the consequences of legislation are really unintended. They're difficult, but really unintended. I'm only going to talk about these 6 privacy principles. There's 13 of them, but only 6 that are relevant to big data. The first one is the anonymity, and now, since March 2014, the pseudonymity principle, which means that you can transact as Donald Duck if you want. But whenever an individual interacts with us as an organisation, we, at law, unless it's required by law to identify them, and that would be something like AML, money laundering, or it's impracticable, we must allow them to be anonymous. Now, it's this second limb, this impracticability limb. That means whether it's feasible or not. So can we quote someone for a general insurance product anonymously? I think we can. Okay, we can't issue a policy anonymously because we need to know where to send their policy wording and their schedule, but we could do a quote. On any online interaction, do we really need to identify those individuals from the second they transact with us via their ISP, via cookies, via tracking? It's heaps easier and it's heaps better for us as an organisation, and the customer might even like us to identify them. But the issue here under the law is whether or not it's impracticable to do so. In the 2013 research report published by the Office of the Australian Information Commissioner entitled Community Attitudes to Privacy Survey, 48% of those respondents believe that the biggest privacy risk was using online services and social media. And interestingly, despite it not necessarily being a misuse at law, 93% of those respondents believe that an organisation that monitors your activities on the internet, recording what sites you go to without your knowledge, equals a misuse of personal information. So there seems to be this disconnect between the anonymity principle, what community believes we're organisations are doing with their information online, and whether we're really actually able to, in the world of big data, continue to provide an anonymous interaction. The next two principles are called the collection principles, and they've been split since March 2014 into solicited and unsolicited collection. The tenets of these principles are: you must only collect personal information if it's reasonably necessary for your functions and activities, and you must collect it directly from the individual unless it's unreasonable or impracticable. So how do we meet these tenets when we have this massive amount of data coming into our organisations? And the untapped value of that big data, or what we know we might want to do with that big data inside our organisation, we don't even know what that data might be useful for when it actually enters our organisation. The regulator clearly is not here, and that's the Privacy Commissioner, he's clearly not here to stifle our innovation or stifle our insights or enable us to price risk appropriately. But what happens when we don't even know if the data we're getting in from these massive voluminous sources is actually relevant to our functions and activities? Look, I'm not sure, to be honest, what the answer to that is. But there is probably some guidance from APP 4, which is the unsolicited data principle, which says if you get data into your organisation and you have no idea, you didn't ask for it, you have no idea why it came to you, within a reasonable period after getting it, you need to do an analysis and you need to ascertain whether or not you could have collected it under principle APP 3. If yes, you can keep it and use it, apply all the other principles, but if not, then you need to delete it and get rid of it. So maybe this is a way to deal with some of the big volumes of data that we're getting in. With the increased amount of unstructured data, access to social media and publicly available information, just because it's sprayed all over the internet or just because someone wants to present their life on the internet doesn't mean you can collect it. Whilst organisations collect personal information indirectly all the time, one of the Privacy Commissioner's factors is whether or not an individual actually reasonably expects you to collect it from them or elsewhere. 96% of respondents in the same study by the OIC believe that it's a misuse of personal information if an organisation that you haven't dealt with before goes and obtains your personal information. And that really begs the question as to whether or not there is a reasonable expectation. APP 5, you'd know, is the privacy statement principle. That is, we need to give one. And based on the issues I've talked about already, I actually think that in this fast-moving, technologically driven environment, how and when we deliver fulsome and meaningful privacy statements to people is kind of pretty difficult. Do you do a pop-up on the computer when we stop letting someone be anonymous, and then when they actually identify them, up comes a privacy statement saying, hey, we know who you are now? Is it too late after the matters, after we formed a profile of them? I'm going to talk about the last three together because they actually form three sides of the same issue. With the sheer volume of data coming into your organisation, what are your processes, your practices and your checks and balances to actually determine quality, accuracy and relevance of personal information? Does it matter if the decisions that you're making as a general insurer are positive to a person, decrease premium, or adverse to a person? Classic example, Facebook claimant's got a back injury, posts a video to Facebook of them water skiing unrestricted, looking really good. We deny the claim. We say we have an adverse decision. Now, what if that video that they posted to the internet was not contemporaneous? What if it was a video that they posted today that was of them 10 years ago when they were an awesome water skier with no back injury? With the volume, variety and velocity of information, can we actually be sure that we are applying APP 10 in terms of quality? And access and correction is the other two sides of that. People are allowed to access their information and they're able to correct their information. Previously, when you only had 100 pieces of information about a person in your store, it was easy to provide them with access. Let's say you have 2,000. People don't care about everything that you have about them, but they might care a lot about one or two of those things and want to actually correct it. So the sheer amount of data, the lineage of that data, and the value of the insights that we get from big data create substantial and possibly unprecedented quality access and correction issues.